This is an ABC podcast.
I'm in the heart of outback Queensland, the rodeo capital of Australia, on the traditional lands of the Kalkadoon people. This is Mount Isa. About 20,000 people live in this oasis of the outback, and mining dominates. I'm looking out at this huge mine that just sits on top of the city here. It's one of the most conservative and safest seats in Australia, and it's not without its issues for young people. I'm Dave Marchese. This is Hack's Election Road Trip.
And I'm not going to allow a pylon.
Google it, mate.
We're just taking questions from journalists.
If you want to go down that path, be very, very careful.
Yeah, we're here in one of the biggest cities in the world, Mount Isa. And you're thinking, what are you talking about, the biggest? Yeah, apparently the Isa used to be in the Guinness Book of Records as the world's biggest city land-wise. So there's a fact for you. It's pretty spread out. And hey, we've got such a good welcome here. Mount Isa's a fun town, a lot of young people here. But we're not here just to have fun, obviously. We're here to talk about big election issues. And one of the biggest this election is cost of living. All the parties are talking about it. And if you think it's bad along the coast, try living in a remote area where the price of some basic foods, groceries, it's through the roof. Hack reporter Ellie Grounds has been getting around Mount Isa this week, and she's found out just how people are coping.
It is just such a young, social place. There's always something to do, whether like it's camping, going to the pub, eating out with friends. Like, it is a really fun place to live.
27-year-old Laura lives in Mount Isa on Kalkadoon Country in remote northwest Queensland. She moved here from the Sunshine Coast to do her country teaching service after graduating uni 7 years ago, and has never left.
Love living in a small town. It's a really good place, and you get like such a good group of friends out here, and that's really what makes it.
Mount Isa is known for two things. Its annual rodeo.
Yeah, 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 to the whistle.
And its mine. This part of Australia is rich in mineral deposits. Mount Isa Mines is the second largest copper producer in the country, and mines one of the largest zinc resource bases in the world. It means a lot of people here are on great salaries, but a lot of Isa's population isn't.
Mount Isa is quite a diverse town with the amount of incomes that people have. I do really feel for our low socioeconomic families out here. You know, cost of living for them is significantly more expensive. If they don't have driver's license, you know, they've got to add taxi fares on just to get to the grocery stores.
Because she works for the education department, Laura gets her rent and bills subsidised. But she has to deal with more expensive groceries than on the coast because of how much it costs to freight them in.
If you visit Brisbane or Sunshine Coast, you're like, what, capsicum's not $14.90 a kilo? So
I had someone tell me they saw a cauliflower for $10 the other day.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
And the first thing people bring up when you ask them if Mount Isa is expensive is how friggin' pricey it is to get in and out of here.
Flights are really expensive. They do have residential flights for people who live here, but even that, they cost over $650 in return. So yeah, it's not the cheapest. I definitely could maybe go overseas for that price.
Like me and my partner, we most of the time opt to drive 30 or 40 hours instead. And oh, it's just about cheaper in fuel anyway, once you work it all out. And oh, you've seen the cost of fuel. For that to still be cheaper is not good.
23-year-old Katie, who works at her family's supermarket and tobacco store, says she and most other young people she knows in Mount Isa are pretty much living paycheck to paycheck.
We all are making ends meet for groceries and fuel, but there's nothing after that. Like, you barely make rent and that, so it's, when you think about trying to own a home, it seems impossible when you can't even save 100, 200 bucks a week.
It's a similar experience for 29-year-old Casey.
For me personally, I think if anyone that's in full-time work at the moment is probably just scraping by. So that's concerning for the people below the line that aren't working, that are on their basic Centrelink income.
Casey's worked a lot with community and homelessness services in Mount Isa. He says the cost of living is hitting the city's Indigenous community particularly hard. And the high cost of rent means there are heaps of First Nations people living in overcrowded houses, with something like three families under the one roof.
Some people have to choose between rent and food. They have no choice but to go without one or the other. That's why there's a lot of demand for services in town, specifically homelessness and food providing services.
Alvin Haver is the general manager of a youth-specific organisation in Mount Isa called Young People Ahead. He says a lot of YPA's clients are from families struggling to make ends meet.
Two-parent family household, both working full-time, 12-hour shifts, multiple jobs at times. You know, mum and dad finding it really difficult to maintain the home front. Rising fuel, you know, wages haven't really increased with the times. I think everyone's feeling the pinch.
And that financial stress is trickling down from parents to their kids.
Well, yeah, we get a lot of young people seeking, donations of food, clothing, being supported to go to appointments, Centrelink appointments, medical appointments, interviews, because mum and dad are just way too busy.
Casey wants to see more done to reduce the huge wealth gap in Mount Isa.
Miners and stuff, they usually live quite well out here. Obviously, they get paid a high wage for doing the dangerous work that they do. But also, on the other hand, the traditional owners of this land, they don't get the reparations that they desperately need.
And when it comes to voting in the federal election, that's going to be front of Casey's mind.
Mainly housing and Indigenous rights. Being Indigenous myself, I see a lot of my people suffering in silence. Some people here get treated like second-class citizens just because of the colour of their skin or where they're from.
Hacks Election Road Trip with Dave Marchese.
Yeah, Ellie Grounds with that story, and we're getting some messages through. Someone says, I used to live in an isolated community in the Top End, and I don't think people understand just how expensive it can be. It's hard to find a safer seat in the country than this one. Mount Isa's in the federal electorate of Kennedy. And to give you some perspective, it's about 2.5 times the size of Victoria. It covers the whole of Queensland's northern outback. The local MP is someone you'll know, a bit rogue sometimes, Bob Catter. Bob's been the member here for almost 30 years. Actually, Bob Catter and his dad before him have more or less held this seat since the 1960s. And it's a full dynasty too. Bob's son, Robbie Catter, is the state MP here. And he's really popular. He's controversial at times. The other day he was calling for teenagers to be trained to use guns to defend Australia. We talked a bit about that. But it's definitely never boring with Bob Catter. And of course, I couldn't come all this way without having a chat to him. I caught up with him a bit earlier.
Hey,
g'day, how you doing?
I'm Josh.
Bob. G'day, Josh. How are
you?
Bob, I'm Dave.
Dave and
nice.
Search.
Nice to meet you. Sliding here.
You're right off your bloody head.
Bob Catter, MP for Kennedy. You've been the local MP here for close to 30 years, right? People know you. Everyone here knows you. You're pretty much the king of the outback.
No, definitely not. Yeah, well, when I go past, they do wave to me, I must admit. But it's a funny sort of wave. They wave with two fingers up like that. It's a funny sort of wave. It's most certainly not a V for Victory wave.
Do you think people up here think differently to other parts of the country? When you see some of the big discussions about, you know, whatever it is, climate change and all the rest of it, do people up here think differently to other parts of Australia?
These people are Australians. You've got to wonder. Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne, 60% of the people there said they would not fight for Australia. So it's not unnatural that, you know, I have a point of view, which is Australian. And I would think there would be very few people in that parliament who I would describe as Australians. And that is a terrible insult, and that's what I intended it to be.
What do you mean by that? Like, why don't you consider them Australians?
I would die before I would have allowed any of those mining companies to have gone overseas. They fostered the sale of six of our giant mining companies to foreign ownership. Metal prices have doubled in the last 9 years, and our wages have actually gone down in the same period of time. So all that money that should have gone into Australia went overseas.
I can tell, like, energy security, foreign ownership, national security are big issues for you. I saw recently...
You've done your research well.
I saw recently, Bob, you got into, made a few headlines about some comments about high school age kids with guns, and, you know, you think high school age kids should be able to use a gun for national security reasons. Why do you reckon that?
I got to admit I was a bit naughty because, you know...
Do you like to make a...
period, thought this will, you know, liven things up a bit.
You like to make a bit of a controversy every now and then, Bob?
Yeah, everyone will disagree with this. They'll attack me all over the place. Well, but no one did. Everyone's agreeing with me.
So come on, Bob, do you like that idea or has you just made it up for some headlines?
I mean, I love, you know, sticking it into people, you know. I have a terrible reputation for getting fights in pubs. I got thrown out of a Tamworth hotel and they said, this is the first time ever somebody thrown out of the finest hotels in North Queensland on many occasions.
Well, let's hope we don't get thrown out of this one this afternoon. You make world headlines, entertaining people, making people laugh, you know, lots of light stuff, but then occasionally offending people, you know.
Outraging people.
Outraging people, that's what I was going to say. What do you reckon when people are outraged by some of the things you say? Like,
well,
you know.
Well, let's just take the guns, right? I'm not backing off. Yes, I did that. As provocation value, but I profoundly believe that it is necessary.
Can I talk about some stuff closer to home happening here? Triple J, which is, you know, where we're from, we're stationed for young people. What do you think of young people today?
We carried out an experiment, raising children without discipline. I can't find any precedent in human history where parents were not allowed to discipline their children. And it's an experiment that has led to Australia having the highest juvenile male suicide rates in the world. So the whole thing's just careering completely out of control. And I don't think there's a single family that hasn't been touched by it.
So Bob, we're travelling the country and talking to young Australians and they're telling us things like they're worried about cost of living, climate change is another big one. What do you think of those issues?
Nick DiMeo, one of our members of parliament, is a very, very good intellect and very articulate. But he uses the word eco-conscience. Where'd you get that from? I said, I don't know. But it's a good word. And I don't think it's bad. You know, I mean, I have a reputation. I refer to Greens as gangrenes. And what they say to me is even nastier still. You know? But having said that, I probably, looking back on my life, I fought more battles than anyone. I mean, the magistrate threatened to throw me in jail when we were fighting against fracking. But for young people, yeah, I think eco-conscience, and I think it's good to have an eco-conscience. I never felt threatened by it. I'm going to close down the coal industry. I think you should go and see a good psychiatrist.
Bob, do you get out and about and speak to a lot of young people in your electorate? Do you think that their views are pretty well represented with you?
Now, this is really interesting, actually, because, you know, I take great delight in kicking greenies at every available opportunity, you know. And you think, you know, a lot of young people, you know, they're very strong on the environment there. But of the photographs, people want to get photographs taken with me and of our supporters and of our opinion polls. We're extremely popular with young people. But, you know, what I'm saying to them is I'm giving you a rifle. You will have a combat rifle in your ear.
So you reckon that's why you're popular with young people here?
Well, you know, I'm saying, hey, we could make a big quid out of this. This is really exciting. We are going to create 5,000 farms. Just go and see your banker. He'll back you, I can assure you that. Put your name in the lottery and you might become owning a $3 million farm.
Is that what you want to do, a lottery?
That's how the state was settled. But young people, I don't know, I've always stayed young. You know, I was involved in the egging the Beatles. I made the international press.
You egged the Beatles?
18. Yeah, we threw eggs at the Beatles.
What?
National publicity.
People were pretty stoked when the Beatles came here, not you.
Stoked? There were 250,000 people lining the streets of Adelaide, and I think there were more in Brisbane. Yeah, but I mean, I think one of the reasons that I think, well, I enjoy company young people so much is they're always up to mischief, you know. There's always something exciting going down, you know. And I've never lost that, you know, youthful excitement. So what are we up to, fellas? You know, what are we up to?
Bob Catter, it's been so good to catch up with you, to have a chat. It's been a wild ride, this interview. We've covered a lot of ground, haven't we?
I don't want to sing any songs before I go, you know.
Do you want to sing a song for me?
To a station out in Queensland, I won't mention names or brands. Came the Gunnamulla fella to break in a string of yangs. A squatter had a daughter, and to the breaker said, keep your evil eyes off her, some squatter she must wed. He said, yeah, yee-haw, yee-haw. Get your gear and we're going to egg the Beatles.
Hacks Election Road Trip on Triple J.
Yeah, there's only one Bob Catter, and I've got to say, I didn't expect him to break into song during that interview. You are listening to Hacks Election Road Trip. I'm coming to you from Mount Isa in outback Queensland. When you're so far away from capital cities, one of the most serious issues is healthcare. Where do you go if you need serious treatment? Like, sure, Mount Isa is a major centre here, but there's only so much you can get done. And it means some of the most vulnerable people in the community are going without proper care. Ellie Grounds takes a look.
I have a rare medical condition called hereditary angioedema. Basically, it causes random swelling in any part of the body, inside or out.
The condition 28-year-old Amber lives with is extremely painful and life-threatening. It affects around 1 in 50,000 people, and the rarity of it means there aren't a whole lot of doctors who are completely across it. And when you live nearly 20 hours drive from your state's capital city, it's even harder to get treatment. That's the reality for the two people in Mount Isa who live with hereditary angioedema, Amber and her 10-year-old daughter.
And so trying to get access to being treated properly is quite difficult. We've got to fight, and it's reaching the point where it's like, why fight? They're not going to listen.
Years ago, Amber lived in Brisbane and says it was way easier to get treatment there because the doctors who do know how to deal with her condition aren't living in remote Australia.
Just being able to see a specialist, I either need to do a video call or hop on a plane to Brisbane because that's where my specialist is. There's very few specialists out here.
It's pretty hard in Mount Isa to find someone who doesn't know someone who's had to fly to either Townsville or Brisbane for medical treatment. That's bad enough, but if you live in an even smaller place in northwest Queensland, there's the added burden of getting to Mount Isa first. Here's Alvin Haver from Young People Ahead, who you heard from earlier.
For anyone that's living out of town, you know, Mornington Island on Gunnina, you know, it's nearly a 2-hour flight. On a small plane. So, you know, you're transversing half of the state of Queensland to get to a major hospital, which is Mount Isa.
Alvin says for First Nations people in northwest Queensland, getting treatment for chronic illnesses like renal failure is a huge issue.
I know a lot of my kin are still sitting in Townsville after many years of being on dialysis, and we're still waiting to bring them home. And that's widespread in northwestern Gulf. We want to bring our mob home, and we want to bring our family back home and be with us, because time is short, you know, when you have a chronic health illness, and many people sadly die living away from community.
Alvin reckons even if the health problem you have can be treated in Mount Isa, the wait lists for services are extremely long.
Our hospital systems are inundated. We don't have enough local nurses and doctors and specialists, allied health persons, to be able to support our community.
24-year-old Nathan says if you're a young person suffering from anxiety or depression, it's super hard to get help.
But when it comes to things, Mount Isa's main issue is mental health problems because it's really quite inaccessible here. We do not have many options, and then if you take what we do have, it's really not the greatest system in the world.
Amber says when she heads into the ballot box on May 21, she'll be thinking about which candidate is going to make healthcare services better for rural and remote Australians.
Improving the healthcare system as a whole, not just for coastal cities, but for rural as well. For like, we need access to simple things like psychologists and psychiatrists. I know people that have been waiting for a pain specialist for 3 years.
So why are there so many issues with accessing healthcare in northwest Queensland? Dr. Uli Orta, who's the treasurer of the Rural Doctors Association of Queensland based in Mount Isa, reckons it starts right at the first person we usually see when we feel sick. the GP.
And the problem there is that a place like Mount Isa has not even half the numbers of GPs that the same area would have in a big city in Australia. So you will have to wait to see your GP, which is a problem if you feel acutely unwell. So you end up running to the hospital to be seen by a doctor there.
And in smaller, more remote communities like Normanton, Doomadgee and Mornington Island, it's even worse. Sometimes there's no doctor at all because they can't get anyone to move there. During this election campaign, both major parties have pledged to spend $146 million to attract doctors to regional, rural and remote parts of Australia and keep them there. But Dr. Orta says that's not enough to fix the problem in his region.
We all have to be aware that this money will be spent all over Australia and not just in Queensland or in the remote west and northwest of Queensland. That means that amount is not as big as it seems to provide incentives.
Dr. Orta wants whoever is in government next to do three things. He reckons GPs need a financial incentive to move, and increasing Medicare rebates, so running a remote GP practice is financially successful, is a good start. He also says funding systems need to be changed, so money isn't sucked up by bigger regional hospitals.
It needs to go to rural and remote. That's where the big problems are. Yes, regional has problems as well, but the further you get away from big city, the bigger the problems become.
And the third thing is to make everything around working in a remote place so good, it makes doctors want to stay.
You should provide appropriate housing for doctors and their families in these areas, and an opportunity for the spouses to work and to develop their own lives to attract doctors to work and stay in these areas.
PAC's election road trip on Triple J.
Ellie Grounds with that story. As you've been hearing, this part of Australia is so different to the coastal areas where most people in Australia live. There are big challenges. There's a different way of living. People often think differently about issues in regional, rural, remote areas, or they have different issues that are important to them. And someone who knows a fair bit about Queensland politics, what people outside the cities think about all this, is journalist Lek Blain. Lek's been travelling around regional Queensland over the past few weeks talking to people about the election. He'll pull up at pubs, he'll have a drink with locals, he's really gauging how people are thinking. And he's with me now. Lek Blain, thanks for coming on Hack.
Hey, mate. No worries at all. Great to be here.
You're from country Queensland, right?
Regional Queensland, yeah. So I grew up in Toowoomba. Before that, I was from a little country town called Wandai. Lived there till I was about four and then, yeah, moved to Toowoomba and went to primary school and high school in Toowoomba.
So, you know, like regional Queensland, you know, you've grown up in this kind of environment and you do this a fair bit. You get out there, get a feel for what people in other parts of the country outside of the cities are thinking about politics. Where have you been during this election campaign?
So I drove up, I defected to Sydney, so I betrayed Queensland before coronavirus. And so I've been living there to write my next book. And then, was doing this piece. So I went up to the Hunter originally, a few trips in regional New South Wales, and then, yeah, came up at Easter to Queensland and spent a weekend at the Gold Coast, and then worked my way up to Bundaberg, where my brother lives, and then went from Bundaberg to Billawheeler, and then, yeah, back down to Toowoomba.
So what are some of those conversations? What are you hearing since you've been out and about? Is it really different to what, you know, we're hearing in the big cities, for instance?
Yeah, it is quite different, like the tone especially. And that was something that was so apparent when I went up to the Hunter. And yeah, the Hunter, I haven't, you know, spent a great deal of time, like, but I found it remarkably similar to regional Queensland. Especially the coal mining areas there, and I went to Cessnock, and Cessnock felt like a coal mining version of somewhere like Bundaberg, where I have spent a lot of time, and the issues that were coming up were just completely different to the issues that I was hearing somewhere like Wentworth amongst voters, where the really big issues, climate change, the treatment of women, and ICAC, and those. None of those things were brought up off the cuff by anyone from memory. And that's not to say that the issues they were bringing up weren't important. They were just very focused on their local communities, very focused on their families, very focused on jobs. So the whole socioeconomic complexion of these areas is just completely different.
If we focus on Queensland, which is where you are now, where we are now, where you've been spending a lot of your time, is there, for instance, a lot of support for the Prime Minister Scott Morrison in a lot of the places that you've been travelling?
It's a little bit different. Like there is some people that genuinely dislike Scott Morrison, but it's not as pervasive as what it is in you know, not even in Wentworth. So somewhere an electorate like Brisbane, which is probably the most comparable sort of seat to those affluent inner city seats in Victoria and New South Wales, I've spoken to university educated people who usually vote liberal, have loved John Howard, and they're completely off Scott Morrison. There's something about Scott Morrison that really rankles with people who consume a lot of news, who pay a fair bit of attention to politics. And yeah, when you move outside of an electorate like Brisbane to the outer suburbs, you know, so areas like Caboolture or Logan where I've been, yeah, you still do get the odd person who is obviously university educated and might not be as predisposed to Scott Morrison's persona. But generally speaking, there is a lot more sympathy towards him. Even amongst people who might be voting for Labor, they say, you know, he did his best. He's getting smashed a lot within the media, but I don't think that he completely warrants that. It would have been a tough job for anyone. So that's a message that has that I've heard repeatedly. That doesn't mean that he's universally beloved by people in the outer suburbs and in regional areas. It just means that there's a little bit less venom towards him, and there's certainly, I think, a bit more receptiveness to, you know, voting for the coalition again.
Do you see big changes in sentiment compared to the last election?
Yeah, it's been pretty noticeable, because when I travelled through Queensland after the 2019 election, when I was still living in Queensland, but I did a really big trip up to Mount Isa Rodeo and sort of just went here, there and everywhere, and people were so angry. There was a variety of reasons for that. The election was quite divisive. The Stop Adani convoy alienated a lot of coal mining communities, but there was also a pretty bad drought. So a lot of farming communities were quite angry as well. There was a real sense of economic threat across a variety of industries. And the interesting thing about this election is that despite the last couple of years of economic uncertainty with coronavirus, a lot of those same industries have done pretty well. There's been a fair bit of rain, you know, exports of beef and different minerals have been at record highs. The regional Queensland has seen an influx of people from the south and from the cities. And so real estate prices have been booming. And there is, for at least for people who are relatively comfortable in those areas, and especially small businesses, they've never done any better. So they're actually feeling pretty happy and pretty relaxed and pretty comfortable about the leadership of the country, as compared to, yeah, as I said, places that have spent significant time in lockdown have a really visceral reaction towards the national leadership.
Are you finding, like, you know, young people outside of the cities maybe are less engaged than some of the young people in the cities heading up to this election?
Yeah, I think they are. I think that there's a little bit less identification with certain issues around whether it's climate change, certain social issues. They're perhaps a little bit less prevalent as talking points in regional or rural areas. So that's not to say that the people don't care about them at all, but there might just be less examples around of people who share those views. And so, yeah, I don't think they're quite as engaged as what they are in an electorate like Wentworth, where or in city areas where the population means that there's a concentration of people who are being brought up in by parents with university educations who are really encouraging their kids to publicly, you know, rally around certain issues.
We've got a couple of weeks to go. It'll definitely be interesting to see what happens. Journalist Lech Blain, appreciate you coming on Hack and breaking that all down for us.
No worries at all. Thanks a lot.
Hack's Election Road Trip with Dave Marchese.
That's all we've got time for on Hack. What an adventure, our election road trip to Mount Isa. It's been so interesting being here. A lot of fun too. We're going to have the shake-up coming to you from Brisbane tomorrow, so there's going to be a bit of a Queensland focus. I'll catch you next time. See ya.